I would say another episode of We the People Radio, but we haven't been here in a few weeks because we got tied up. So we're sorry we had you listening to archives, although they were really good archives. But today is the 23rd of October, 2022, and we got two guests for you today, people that you've never heard from. So we thought we'd come back with a bang. How's that? So Bill might have some sponsor information.
Oh, I was waiting for you to identify yourself, but
I'm not gonna.
You're not gonna?
No.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, I'm here.
Well, I'm not gonna either. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Pape will get you pretty much anything you need in the way of tractors, implements, parts, service. They do it all up there. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake. Or give them a call at 226-9226, and they can pretty much take care of any of your ag or turf questions. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. There you go.
And the I have multiple free advertisements to do, but I'm going to do them one at a time.
Oh, well, that would be great, because if you do them all at the same time, you get kind of confusing. That's a good pick.
No, but I'm going to do one this week, one next week, because we have come across some really amazing professionals. So if you're thinking about financing something like a house and you actually want to get it done in record time, you should call Valerie Volbrecht over at Summit Funding. And her email is teamvalerie@summitfunding.net, and you can find her at 530-410-6478.
Does a great job.
Does an amazing job.
Yep.
Actually, it was an amazing job. It's pretty difficult to buy a house and move into it in under 30 days, but Valerie and her team of professionals, the greatest part about that was she steered me to some terrific people. And they made all the difference for us. So, Valerie Volbrecht at Summit Funding. I'll give you the number again. It's 530-410-6478. Or you can contact us and we'll reiterate that for you. Our phone numbers and email addresses are on the web at wethepeopleradio.us.
There you go.
There. How's that?
So who do we have today?
Yes. Well, we have two terrific people that we have never spoken with before, so brand new information for us. Scott Cleland is up first. He's the executive director of the Restore Us Institute. I'm having trouble seeing this here. My glasses have gone all crazy. A nonpartisan nonprofit that educates the public about internet accountability problems and solutions. None of us have ever had that before.
No.
Cleveland was Deputy U.S. Coordinator for International Communication and Information Policy in the H.W. Bush administration. And you can find him at restoreusinstitute.org. And I posted the article that he wrote, which is how we found him, through his terrific publicist, Stephen Manfredi, who sends us just the most interesting people ever. So he had an article in Town Hall, and we'll let him tell us about it. Scott, sounds like you might be in there.
Yes, I am, Aaron. And Bill, thank you for having me. Long format's very helpful on this.
Yeah, you know, but there are too many things that can't be done in a minute and a half, and so we try to be the venue for that.
Exactly. And if I can just give a little bit more context on Restore Us Institute, is we're the only entity right now that is trying to help all of the individual internet problem groups. And we know there are dozens of things wrong with the internet. And there are great people working to solve one with one piece of legislation. The problem is they all are not able to create critical mass. And what we do is we have now the research to basically back up that there is one root cause for almost all of the internet unaccountability problems. And once you know the cause, you know the cure. And so there is a, what we're all about is trying to do that holistic fix on solving the problems. So what is the universal problem? And that is in 1996 and 1997, we had basically new internet policy that was set. And what it did was set an absence of government, whether it was national, whether it was legislative, whether it was judicial, or executive branch. The common theme was no government. And that made sense for the first, you know, 5 to 10 years in getting adoption of the Internet and getting it built out. But as an operating idea for everything, everyone using everything everywhere for life, work, and play, it is, you know, approved anarchy on online on autopilot, and it's been a disaster. And so we have a simple solution to that, and that is to restore constitutional accountability over the U.S. Internet in U.S. policy. And what does that mean? That means same rules and rights offline and online, equal protection under the law. And if it's illegal offline, it's illegal online. So hopefully that's not more than you needed, but it's an important context about what we're all about.
Kind of give people some examples. Like what? Like I don't want to say in rank order, but yeah, maybe in rank order. Like what do you think
the problem?
Yeah.
Oh well, it's don't look at this as you know the which ones are the top ones, but you know there are so many. Most Americans themselves or have loved ones that have been victims of cybercrime, mm-hmm. cyberbullying or harassment, or other cyber harms. What are some of those? Elder fraud is a huge one, but the fraud category, you know, there are literally, you know, 5, 10, 15, depending on how you want to slice it, of really serious fraud problems. Obviously, crypto has been a huge problem on fraud. But then you have all sorts of types of abuse of people, from predation of children, sex trafficking of minors, you know, sextortion. I mean, there's just all sorts of things that can be done badly to people. And then, you know, there's clearly, you know, many kinds of cybercrime. And, you have things like you probably have seen, you know, flash mob and robs. That's an Internet problem. Mm. You have cyber espionage, where the Chinese literally can do whatever they want to us and steal our greatest secret. And Russia and Putin do the same thing with ransomware and with cybercrime. They're the ones pulling the puppet strings behind that, letting it happen and not letting it happen. That's just, you know, identity theft. Oh, one I can't believe I didn't mention up front. If you want to say how this is killing people, 100,000 Americans died last year from fentanyl poisoning. How is that Internet related? Well, 97% of all online pharmacies are illegal. Almost all the 35,000 are overseas.
Wow.
And so how people get, you know, it's like, did they get it on Instagram? Yes. They get on Facebook? Do they get it from the loyal, local drug dealer? Yes. Where do they get it? Well, it's just flooding in from the Chinese, generally going through Mexico. But how people get it and find it and then die is because they think they're getting safe medicine. And there's a great organization, safemedicines.org, that works on this. But like this, that problem, there are problems like this all around. Enough is Enough, another good organization that's trying to do, you know, keep children safe from sex harms and all that. But you know, the overall problem is caused by U.S. policy allowing it, tolerating it, and ultimately promoting it. And they've been doing it. Let me put this in perspective. 5 administrations, 13 Congresses, and 17 Supreme Court justices have neglected to protect the American people and minors from online crimes and harms for 25 years. Excuse me for hearing my indignation, but this is just, I call it mindless madness. We had to come up with a new word to describe this because it's so far beyond the pale, you know, that the government hasn't done what its purpose is. I mean, we the people, aren't we the people that are the, you know, consent of the governed, and aren't they the one, aren't the people the most important that are supposed to have the most power in America? Haven't been that way since Internet policy. So hopefully that's a good background to start from.
So the things you're describing are illegal. They're illegal online and offline. But what you're saying is we don't enforce it like we do offline. I mean, if you were trafficking children, you're going to get arrested and thrown in jail. If you traffic children online, it's much harder to catch these people, or are you saying they just don't go after them?
Bill, you're looking at this almost on base, but let me tell you what makes this so crazy, and then you'll understand better when I'm saying what you say. Is it are these things illegal online? When you look at what they've done, is they have basically taken away sovereignty. So that's all the international stuff. We gave up, the normal kind of sovereign control over our borders. So we have an open digital border, free flow of information. Well, information can take any, data, any form. Mm-hmm. And so it can be coming in as a cyber attack. It can be coming in as a fentanyl drug deal or whatever. And it isn't illegal. Some things, like some sex trafficking now is. But that's the only law that's passed in the last 25 years. It's called FOSTA and SESTA. But what's different with this is when the federal government said we have no government online, they said we want them to be unfederal by federal or state regulation. So what they did was set a policy that they didn't want any government on the Internet or any control. So that means no constitution, no rule of law, no rights. And when they did that, they basically said, we're now going to create jurisdiction. They don't use that word. I'm just using that to help people understand it. Where they basically said online, if that was considered a jurisdiction, they want that to be government-free. They also were saying, which is a Tenth Amendment problem, is they preempted state rights and the local rights that went away, along with it, and the people. As you all know, people and then local and state, it goes up that way. But over time, in different ways, the policy, whether it was in Congress, executive branch, administrative agencies, or through the court system, they had different things that made it so that everybody was shut out. Like, for example, if you brought on a victim of fentanyl where they lost a child or something, or other things where they were defrauded, like I know of one person who lost $150,000 through an online scam. So they went to the police. Well, of course, you get stolen, $150,000. Well, and they, most of the time, they have to say, it's not our jurisdiction. We want to do it, but we can't do it. We've been basically, and they say, in your instance, you need to go to the FBI. Well, if you call the FBI and say you've been financially defrauded, this applies to elder fraud and others, they'll say, how much did you lose? And if you lost less than $1 million, they don't have the time or staff for you.
Yeah. Wow.
Not.
Yes, and I've heard that more than once.
If you're defrauded, only the people that get defrauded a lot get justice. So there is no justice online. It just doesn't exist. And why other people, why you haven't had, 50 people come on as experts and talk about this. I've been doing internet policy for 30 years since the beginning, before it was there. And I've been an analyst and been known as, somebody who knew what was happening before it happened. And I've been working on this, depending on how we slice it, 3 or 4 years ago, I realized as a researcher and a thought leader in this space, no one had ever pulled together all of the negative dynamics and crime waves and things on the Internet. And, of course, we have heard everything positive. I mean, big tech and everybody, they can't sing the praises enough. And, look, I think there were tremendous good things that came out of it. But they have buried and hidden and not talked about it. So, literally, the last 3 years it's taken me, but I had to develop a new research discipline. Not the first time. I did change research a while back for investors. But here, think about if you were trying to understand the economy and there was only micro-internetics, basically for businesses and whatever, and there wasn't something for overall that pulled it together. Well, that's the problem on the internet, is no one had done what I call macro internetics. And so it's nuts, the fact that people haven't figured out and talked about it. It's not that people don't know the problem.
Right.
They're looking at them individually, piecemeal. They're taking a straw and looking at it, or they're taking a microscope and looking at one thing. The thing about the internet is it's all unitary. It is all, you know, it's a holistic system. It all behaves the same way on its holistic principles and holistic technology. And so, and the policies are holistic. So it's really not that complicated if you look at it whole. That's what our innovation is. That's where we can be very helpful. And people should be encouraged that the mindless madness out there can be fixed. But
yeah,
the people have to come together and expect it.
Well, and without, I have an example. When we come back, I have one. We did a show quite a while back on suicide predators that utilize the internet.
Yep.
And at that time, we didn't even know there was such a thing. So that was really alarming. But then as we looked into the policy of how you fix it, you get into the whole censorship thing. So then who's deciding what's okay? Maybe when we come back, you can, or at some point, we'll walk through that part. All right.
Please.
Our guest this morning is Scott Cleland. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
So back in like 2013, maybe 2014, we had a dad came on the radio, live local here. His daughter had gone to the University of Florida, and they noticed kind of a change, and they kind of chalked it up to, well, you know, she's a freshman in college, and she's far away from home and all that. Well, bottom line, she had become very depressed, and they didn't know that. And she had gotten online and joined some chat group that's like a suicide chat group. I guess they have a chat group for everything. And there were people, I'm sure there are many more now, but back at that time, who were trolling the internet in those kinds of chat rooms looking for people. And they would say, oh, I'm depressed too. They basically became their suicide pal. And in a lot of cases, like the dad had done a whole lot of research on this. And so not only did they walk his daughter through how to buy, what's the chemical? Cyanide. She bought cyanide and taught her, and the information was all online on her computer. How to use it, what to do. And okay, I'm going to do it too. All right, let's do it now. 10987654. Like, and then that person disappears and the daughter's dead. And he was thinking, there has to be a law against this. This is crazy. Like, how could people do that? He was in a different state, and that was what tied their hands. They did figure out who the guy was, though. Has that changed, or is that still an open problem?
It's still an open problem.
Wow.
Like, on elder fraud, at least the Justice Department really is prioritizing and working on it. But every way that you can defraud and more, the bad guys have figured it out online.
I mean, sure.
Especially with teenagers and, you know, getting them to, as you were talking about, self-harm or suicide and, but, you know, how kids get groomed by predators. But I mean, there are a whole bunch of other ones, like revenge porn, it's called, sextortion,
oh, right.
which is, you know, people having pictures of you and then they extort you over the phone or whatever. So the fraud aspect, that's another thing where all of this fraud is enabled, promoted, and tolerated in U.S. policy. And, you know, so it happens with impunity. And so this is, it gets marginally better in certain times when Washington says, oh boy, this is serious, we better pay a little attention to it. And they pay attention to it and they get some good press and whatever, and generally they don't stick to it. Elder fraud may be one exception, but and, you know, child predation, that's an area where recently it's gotten much better. But it took 20-odd years.
What's the holdup? If you were gonna switch teams and you were gonna lobby against what you're advocating, what's the pushback?
The pushback is, oh my goodness, somebody might regulate the internet.
Right.
And we can't regulate the internet because, you know, the internet will die and we won't have the internet. So they'll give you an argument that says, and that's what big tech will do, is they'll say, you know, that the policy, if it is changed, and if somebody looks at the policy wrong, and I'm being a little bit facetious here, but, you know, it won't work, and it'll cause all of these problems. And they've been making that argument for 25 years. Anytime anybody wants any accountability for them, they are the most entitled, pampered group of people you will ever find on the planet. And if anybody wants to, you know, keep them from getting their $1 trillion cap or allows them to do whatever, they will say, you know, that's, you know, with disruptive innovation, we have to be able to do that. Of course we need to do it. And innovation is only good. There's all sorts of terrible innovation. They've made it out that innovation is only good. Criminals and predators are the most innovative, and they have always been the leading edge of innovation in a new market.
Yeah,
and that's why
true.
Crypto is so corrupt. So but that's what they'll say. They'll say this is just going to be big government and it's going to be big regulation. And what's ridiculous here is this is not, what we're basically saying is the laws that apply offline that people are being protected by should protect them online.
Sure.
I mean, it's just common sense because think about it. The internet now, and it hasn't been until the last 5 to 10 years, it is totally integrated so that everyone does everything everywhere on life, work, and play. And you either do it in person while you're talking, or you might pick up your phone and then you're doing it online, or you might get on your laptop or some other device, but or your Ring outside your door. All of this stuff is connected to it. But it's basically you and it's basically another person, and they're not different. It's just they're doing it over a different dimension. But everybody bleeds, bruises, and dies the same way. Everybody defrauds and abuses and attacks the same way. And so the fact that we have created this alternative artificial universe, which is now going to be called the metaverse, where there's no accountability, no rule of law, no rights, no recourse, no access to justice. You're on your own. Wild West.
Yeah.
Might is right, and spite is right.
Well, there are things popping up, too, and I have not had a chance to research them. And actually, I'll email you once I find it. So I know it's in my notebook at home. Had a lady, lives in a rural county here, and she was got up in the morning, got some kind of an email that said, you know, they're trying to hack your bank account. Your bank account is being hacked. This is Microsoft. And then her phone rings, and this is so-and-so from Microsoft. And, you know, they're trying to siphon money out of your bank account. Didn't ask her for any personal information or anything, but did know about this supposed hack. Well, before she could do anything about it, her phone started ringing with a number out of New York. And she said, hold on, I have another call. And the person on the line said, oh, if it's from New York, it's the hackers. That's where they live. And so she didn't take the call. And she was really skeptical of these people, so she didn't give them any good information or anything. But before she could really make a whole lot of decisions, probably 5 minutes went by, and there's a knock on her door. It was the local police department.
And the policeman said, "Are you on the phone?" And she said, "Yes." He said, "Leave your phone inside and come outside." So she leaves her phone on the counter and goes outside. And he said, "You're on the phone with people that are trying to hack your bank account. We've been contacted by this group who actually is out of England using a New York number who monitors the internet for cybercrime. And apparently, because she wouldn't take the call, contacted her local police department and, like, stopped the whole thing." But I mean, I've never even heard of that before.
Yeah, that's pretty complicated ruse.
Have you ever even heard of that before? I mean, this just happened like a month ago.
It is. They are so sophisticated and so clever. I mean, I have, sometimes I shake my head because when I see them or they come at me in whatever firm they are, I'll go, wow. I just, the thing is you just have to, when you have any doubt or you have any thing you don't understand, it's fraud. You have to have that mentality.
Well, it turned out the people from England who called the police were not trying to defraud her. They were trying to warn her. She was on the phone with the people. But how would they know who she was on the phone with, and how would they know that the fraud people were contacting her? I guess.
And the thing is the fraudsters are so sophisticated. They come with information because they bought it on the dark web.
Sure.
And so they know a lot about you, and they'll make you comfortable, and they'll say, "Well, I know this, this, and this." And then they also know where you bank, and so they've been doing this for so long, they also know the bank and what it has, and they'll throw out a few pieces of information there that sounds like they're legit. And so it is really, really hard as a, even professionals, are scammed. I mean, that's how they broke into, how the Chinese, through phishing, literally broke into every Alphabet Soup government agency, all the military and the enforcement agencies, all of the cabinets, and all the Fortune 500. I mean, the FBI director basically, said it's the biggest wealth transfer in world history, that they stole about $500 billion worth of trade secrets, and that was probably 6, 7, 8 years ago.
Wow.
So it's only gotten worse. I mean, the cybercrime industry is a multi-trillion-dollar problem.
And is a lot of the cybercrime, is it a lot of that is state sponsored,
state enabled, or especially like with Russia, it's they are allowed and have connections. And then if Russia ever gets squeezed too much, they might, tell somebody to back off. But it's just like, North Korea has a bunch of bad guys, China has a bunch of bad guys, and Iran do. And they, and the crazy thing, the mindless madness here is we have a policy that literally aids and abets our most dangerous adversaries. Because we, basically, it's an asymmetric warfare, asymmetric risk. And we basically let all the stuff flow in, and then we try and deal with it once it's done. So it's kind of like saying we have a policy of, we don't protect our animals until, the barn door's been opened and they're all outside and we have to chase them down. That's essentially where the government is. It's not that they're not protecting you. They wait until it's happened. Mm. Like the ransomware thing that happened with energy on the East Coast that, messed with for a good, 10 days. But, that was Russia, and it was, very debilitating. And the scary thing is with that policy, if all those four countries got together and decided to, basically do all the things they do all at once, it would be total chaos. And we have very good cyber stuff, but that's warfare. And what I'm saying is in the Homeland Security or the public safety or law enforcement, is if that information's coming in and it's doing mayhem and it's harming people, that is basically being tolerated and promoted and allowed by U.S. policy, and it has been. That's why all these problems are so out of control and not getting fixed. Mm. And it's we only get involved with the military once it gets escalated to, you know, but by that time, all these people have been hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
You were going to say something about censorship. I should get back to that.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Because that's got to be the biggest, I mean, the guy with the daughter who was murdered by the predator because he was out of state and because he was online and he never physically contacted her and all of those things, then it didn't really qualify at that time anyway as murder because she didn't have to do it. He wasn't standing there. And he never had any real contact with her. But there was this giant long con and mind game that, I mean, I would argue did make him responsible. But the big pushback was, well, you can't monitor everything everybody says online and then, you know, who decides if that's a risk or not.
And now this gets us into censorship because
yeah.
The thing that most media, most people... Here we hear about literally each side on the right and left scratching each other's eyes out online. You know, the political, they fight over the exact same thing. And on the right, they look at that thing and they say this moderation, content moderation, is censorship. And that's the way they call it. And then the left looks at it and says they think that's misinformation or disinformation. And big tech knows that. They know that if they can keep free speech and say free speech is what should drive the internet completely, like free speech absolutism, and that as long as they have both political parties clawing each other's eyes out on that and literally spending most of their time raising money so that they can claw the other side's eyes out more, and that's the game. I mean, they are so focused on that battle, they've totally lost sight that there's an American people out there to protect. And so why would I say this? Because you hear about censorship and big tech, and if you look at the parties, they'll talk about how, you know, they are, you know, a big problem on this, depending on which side you're on. And the thing is free speech, generally it is a celebrity or an influencer or a politician who is making the complaint about, either censorship or disinformation. Let's put this in perspective. The way I like to describe it is the things that are like that, where you're really fighting over, you know, a specific case, that's like 5% of the internet problems. When you look at this holistically, you know, something that would elevate to that, like a free speech thing. I mean, think offline. I mean, is more than 5% of crime offline related to free speech? Of course not. It's probably way less than 1%.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, and what I'm trying to tell you is, and they spend 95% of their time on that 5%, basically raising money, doesn't matter which side you're on, looking at things, and they'll literally flood you with robotext, robocalls, with emails of, you know, fund this because we need to do it in order to win. And they've totally forgotten the American people, the 95% of crimes which we've discussed that are being ignored and promoted and actually encouraged by both sides because of their neglect. It is a dereliction of duty by the whole government over a long period of time. And the problem is early on, you're not going to believe this. I mean, this, when I found this, it took my indignance, you know, to the stratosphere. But let me explain that.
Scott, hold that thought. We'll come back and be indignant.
Okay.
Yes, I don't want to cut you off in the middle because, you know, a good rant's hard to find these days. Okay, not really, but.
I'll do it quickly. The free speech, the Supreme Court, basically, their only decision was Reno versus ACLU in 1997. That was the case.
Uh-huh.
And they overturned it 9-0 because on technical matters, it was an abridgment of adults' access to porn because it was too sweeping. Well, that was called the Communications Decency Act. but it had a very righteous and good criminal provision in it that was also overturned by the Supreme Court, because when they, you know, there were 8 parts of it that were bad, and they said, oh, precedent says it's easier just to knock them off. Well, do you know what one of those things was? And I figured this out only because of my research, and when I read it, I went through the roof. Because there was a law that was the law of the land from 96 to 97, which called Section 508, and it said that, you know, for it is a 10-year prison fine, and, you know, and it also had her sentence, and then fines for coercing or enticing a minor or children for sex and sex trafficking. Now, everybody that is sentient or has a conscience knows that pimping children for sex coercively is a crime, mm-hmm. a heinous crime,
yeah.
one of the worst crimes you can have. Well, the Supreme Court, not looking at what else was in the, because I think if they really thought it, they just applied the precedent and didn't look. And so, once again, bipartisan, it was a big mistake in my eyes. But what did they teach the judiciary for the next 25 years? And everybody that did the research and looked at it says, wow, you know what? If the Supreme Court says it's protected constitutional free speech to pimp children or coerce them, then that's how we now get decisions that says, you know, terrorist funding for Hamas is free speech.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I always wondered how, they squared that, because that seemed like a pretty loose interpretation. How about that? Let's come back and talk about this a lot more. We'll be back with our guest, Scott Cleland. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
.us.
All the gold in California is in a bank in the middle of Beverly Hills in somebody else's name. So if you're dreaming about California, it don't matter.
Hated to interrupt you in the midst of the legal beagling, but go back to that, Scott, and kind of expand on that a little bit on how we got here with the Supreme Court, because I don't think most of us followed that at all.
No, and that they wouldn't. That is something I learned, but it essentially the Supreme Court in this area. The other thing they did is they assumed. Because, you know, when you make a decision back in 1996, it was 1996 kind of fact. The Internet then was used by one senator. So that was Leahy. A few percentage of Americans were early adopters. And in 1996 to 1997, Americans used the Internet an average of 30 minutes. A month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
A month. So people were using it a minute because it was so slow. Now, they basically, that was their decision then, you know, that they and porn was the innovators, and that was actually already quite developed at that time. But none of the, you know, we never thought about social media or any of that other stuff back then, or a smartphone. And so they made a free speech absolutist view, because the other thing that's crazy about this is that there's only one internet law. It was that sex trafficking. It took 20 years to fix that, and that was done a few years ago. But defamation was the only law that got into the 1996 Telecom Act. So basically, big tech said, this is such a great thing for us, is we're going to basically say there's only one problem on the internet, and that's defamation. So that's why everybody spends all their time on free speech and everything on censorship, because there's only one law. And back then, they only thought, oh, this could be just a publisher or a speaker. The problem is the Internet is an all-purpose technology that can be, that was used for e-commerce. So anything, and we know you can't lie and cheat and steal in business and not have it be legal online, but they basically made it legal online. And so that's why we have, you know, have so much fraud. So it just was a case where the Supreme Court didn't get back to it. They did get back to it on property, and they shut down Napster and they shut down Grokster, you know, radio and video. But they, other than that, they've had kind of this absolutist, and they need to wake up. I think they will kind of look at it in the next year or two, or next year. They've got cases. But, of course, that's both parties wanting them to say, choose one party over the other. Is it instant censorship or is it misinformation? And it's both.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is the Supreme Court's got to focus on this, and they've got to realize that, you know, like they've done offline, they have created things that are unprotected speech. You know, you, and we know what they are. You can't incite a mob. You can't have fighting words. You can't, you know, joke about being a terrorist and, you know, trying to get on a plane. That's illegal. It should be illegal because it can create chaos. But there are other, you know, you can't lie. You can't perjure yourself in contracts or in court, and there's defamation, there's slander. So there are things that are, you know, you don't have free speech absolute off here. And the thing is the Supreme Court's got to wake up and realize that online, because they've let this run on autopilot for 25 years, there are many more things that are crimes that are done through the spoken word or through speech, because that's what the law and what the precedent and what the technology allows, fosters, and multiplies. So they're just so far behind, and they've got to basically, you know, there's no right and wrong. There's no justice online. There's no access to justice. And the reason why there's no access to justice is because big tech many years ago figured out that they could get summary judgments. Anytime you sue, they would get a summary judgment, and before a complainant could even get a deposition, they would be thrown out of court. And so that's been the reality, no access to justice for the last 25 years. Big tech, you know, I mean, I maybe this is a little bit of hyperbole, but the amount of money they spent on legal fees over the last 25 years is in the billions. Of just legal fees.
Wow.
In order to basically keep the status quo. And, you know, small countries could run on that. You know, how it's happened.
One of the things that it's kind of bouncing around in my head is if law enforcement was to go after all these crimes that are happening on the Internet, do we have the manpower to really?
Yeah, I was just going to say, look, what's the enforcement mechanism that you envision for this? If they did write a really good law and these things now were not legal, who would be or what would be the
branch or
Yeah.
I mean, who's going to enforce?
Yeah, who does this? Space Force.
Well, and that, the thing is we have a systemic, you know, disequilibrium. So the system is completely discombobulated and disoriented, because normally, you know, law enforcement know it's illegal or whatever. They just basically said they don't have the jurisdiction and they can't enforce it.
Right.
And so, you know, then it becomes, you know, then they can get it enforced. And then what you do is it'll trigger almost on itself that if people are calling in and saying, you know, now we have the hundredths person that's been harmed in this different kinds of fraud in this little town, they're going to need to get more resources, or in the state level. So there's no question that there, you know, that if you restore constitutional accountability, the whole point of it is there will be a rule of law and there will be courts
right.
and whatever. And but the choice is you can have anarchy, which we have right now, and there's no liberty, there's no equality, there's no justice. In anarchy, it is might is right, and we've seen what happens when you go there. And so it's literally a law. You know, do we want to live in anarchy and have what's happening now. I mean, an interesting thing I did to tie back to the original kind of the declaration is I did a piece that was sent around, and you probably can see it's like, you know, what's causing America's widespread worsening? And what I did is I looked through the lens of the six goals of the Constitution, and all of them have gotten much worse. So we're less united, less just, less peaceful, less secure, less flourishing, and less blessed. And those are, you know, the form of more perfect union, established justice. Those are all the in the preamble of the Constitution. That also gets me to what we're something that we're doing differently, and what I want to encourage. You know, we're at restoreusinstitute.org, and we would love for people to sign. If you've listened and you heard about this and you want to do something about it, well, what we've done is create a very, I think, accurate, and I say peaceable, civil, and constitutional way of approaching this. We have basically done a declaration of independence from unchecked technological tyranny. And the original declaration in 1776 had 28 grievances. Ours has 20. And the reason we came up with this, I came up with this idea 2 years ago, is I realized the tyrants don't change through the centuries. They do the same thing. Tyrants are tyrants. Mm-hmm. And so we literally have, you know, we've documented the 20 tyrannies. And we've also, and to kind of, you know, simply say it, you know, they've taken away our humanity, they've taken away the concept of justice and the concept of safety online. And that's, those are all tyrannies. But the other thing we're doing, like, it's like if people sign this thing, well, what are we signing? We're saying basically what you're doing is you are restoring the Constitution. So there's a reconstitution aspect. There's restoration of your Bill of Rights and your civil rights and all the other rights you have back online. And then your other thing you're doing that's unique is petitioning for people primacy protection. And that is, right now, we protect platforms from by not protecting people. That's the craziness of how our internet unaccountability policy is. So we protect technology and businesses from regulation, and who's paying for it is all the victims, basically, because no one gets protected. And so how do they become trillionaires? How do they become done so well? But it's all on the backs of the people. And if people, you know, your audience, that's why we're so happy to be here. We the people.
Yeah,
those are the first three words of the Constitution.
Well, we I hate to say it, but we've actually run out of time. I kind of thought we would on this particular topic. We would love it if you came back and updated us. And I hope
Please,
people will go look at your site at restoreusinstitute.org with Scott Cleland. And we've got it all posted for you online. Thank you, Scott. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and I hope we speak with you again. You are.
I hope so too. Thank you.
Absolutely. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
The dreams on which I'm dying are the best I ever had. I find it hard to tell you. I find it hard to take. When people run in circles.